This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
David, look! They're wheels!
Wheels? 여기 대체 어디야?
집이지. 새로 시작한다고 그랬잖아. 이게 그거야.
아빠는 빅 가든 하나 만들 거야.
What a wonderful day to be in the house of the Lord. If you're here with us for the first time, please stand. What a beautiful family. Glad you're here.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila, and Arvin. Today, we are reviewing one of 2021's big Oscar contenders, and that is Minari, directed by Lee Isaac Chung.
So Minari's been, I think, generating headlines for nearly a year now from the time when it didn't qualify for the Golden Globes, I believe, because enough of it is not in English, because most of it has Korean dialogue, but it is made by a Korean-American. And then now it's scooped up nominations for the Oscars for Best Film, Best Screenplay, Best Male Lead. First time an Asian-American is getting nominated, as well as Best Supporting Actress. So it's kind of just exploded out of nowhere. And once you watch it, I think you'll understand why it's getting that kind of attention.
Mm. It's one of those films that is about nothing at all, but is also about so many things at the same time. And I know that sounds like extremely pretentious to say, like, super artsy-fartsy for no reason, but it is. It's. I guess it depends on the person watching. Like, it can be just about a family trying to survive or a family going through a period in time of their lives. Or it can be about other things depending on what you wanna see. So there's a lot to peel back. There's so many layers to the film. But it doesn't require you to know any of those layers or relate to anything at all for the film to function and work perfectly well, which is, I can't remember the last time I've seen a movie like that. So I really, really liked that they took that approach.
So that point you just made, right, about can't remember the last time. I think that this is the first movie I've seen this year. I think our reviews and our podcast back catalog could prove me wrong, but I think that this is the first film I've watched this year that wasn't a throwback that I found very emotionally satisfying. And that was gratifying, right? Because we've spoken recently about things like about very bombastic films, because those are the ones that have been lying in wait all year. And then now the studios are like, take it, give us your money. And Minari doesn't have that quality. It's just a film that I think if you love film, if you love stories, it's a great one to watch for that reason. It's very gentle. It's not a big story in any way or form. It really just looks at Monica and Jacob Yee, and they are Korean immigrants in the 70s, and they've decided to relocate from California to Arkansas, and not just to Arkansas, but to really rural Arkansas. And they have their two children in tow, and they're eventually joined by Monica's mom. And that is the whole story. And the rest of it is just sort of farming struggles, family struggles, and really, really beautiful cinematography.
So you said emotionally satisfying, and I wanted to say that I can't stress enough how emotionally complete this film feels, because there are times when you laugh out loud. Things are just hilarious in the way that day-to-day interactions in a family can be. There are times when I was terrified. There are times when I was melancholic. There are times when I was sad. It really does take you on in a very emotional journey without overdoing it. It's not playing to hit those sort of high notes. It just kind of tells a story in a very gentle way. I think gentle is a great word. And somehow that ends up working better than if they had actually tried to punch you emotionally.
It's not trying to hit high notes. It's also not trying to hit quote-unquote Asian notes. So everyone who was working on the film, whether it's the writers, the directors, even Steven Yeun, have come out and said that they don't want this film to be like the bastion of the Korean experience in America. It's not supposed to be about immigration and stuff. They just want it to be about a family who happen to be Korean. So I thought that was a very unique approach and a very unique decision, because normally when you have films like this that get nominated for, you know, Oscars or are doing well in like film festivals and stuff, they're always about, like you said, like a punch in the gut, and they want to be like very heavy on those themes. This isn't. Which I feel it could have been if it wanted to be. And I think it would have still done the same things and done the same rounds and had the same effect. But they decided to just mellow it down and sort of not go that way, which is very interesting.
So I mentioned earlier that it was directed by Lee Isaac Chung, right? Mm. But I failed to say that it was also written by him. And I think when I found out that it was a sort of semi-autobiographical film, then the quality of the movie made a lot more sense, because it isn't dreamlike, but it does meander almost from scene to scene. It's not in a rush. It's not trying to really take you anywhere. There is a pinnacle in the film. It does hit an emotional climax, and when that comes, it's incredibly powerful. But the rest of the film is very slow, and it does not take, it's not rushing to get anywhere. And I think understanding that it came from somebody mining his own life and memories and kind of transposing that into a different, into a separate story, that quality in the film made a lot more sense. I also think that the writing and the specific things within the story about, it's not so much about immigration, actually. I think it's more to do with family relations and dynamics and what it means when you have things and you don't have things, what it means for two parents to believe that they each have the best idea of what their family needs at that moment. I think those are the things that it does very well, more so perhaps than any sort of commentary on America.
And because it comes from memories that are kind of stitched together, I also feel that, and again, I think his point of view obviously was because this is inspired by the life that his parents had. There's also a sense of, I don't want to say not taking sides, but there is a generosity in the way he imagines each of these characters. They're not without flaws. All of the adults are flawed in many ways, but they're not accused in some way. Mm. You know, the mistakes they make are very human mistakes.
Grandma is perfect. Oh. I won't hear a word about Grandma.
I love Grandma. I mean, I just wanted to say that if anyone deserves the Oscar, and Steven Yeun is great, but if anyone deserves the Oscar, Yoon Yeo Jung as the grandmother is perfect. I love every scene she's in.
Bring me mountain water while I watch wrestling on the floor. It's just, she's so great.
Honestly, that whole thing about how he drew from memory now makes perfect sense, because my favorite thing about the movie, about Minari, is how he paces it. And we've said that nothing much happens or nothing at all happens. And that pacing of life in some place rural or in the middle of nowhere is very, very accurate. Like if you're anyone who spent any amount of time in any kampong during the school holidays, time moves like ridiculously slow. Like it's Monday for a month and then it's Tuesday. And this movie does that perfectly. Like you sit with them and you feel like it's been either like months or long stretches of time. Even though the movie itself is not that long. It's like it's barely 2 hours, I think.
Well, I mean, an entire crop of vegetables do grow, so some time has passed.
It's the minutiae of the movie, I think, that really is very, very moving for a movie that doesn't move much. You know, there are a lot of very dreamy sequences where the family is looking at the land. They often walk on this land that Steven Yeun's Jacob has bought. And that is in and of itself quite a fraught experience, because he bought this essentially wanting to farm. It's his dream, right? The job that the two parents have essentially is chicken sexing. And it's fine. It appears to pay well, but you can also very easily understand why that might not be somebody's dream to do forever. He actually says, you know, I looked at chicken butts for 10 years, like that's enough. And so all these sequences of people walking on the land and kind of establishing their relationships, I think it's really interesting, because the land is so many different things. It is by turns fruitful, frustrating. It gives, it takes away. Water comes, water goes. And yet you also just have these moments of people wandering through of butterflies, of various sort of things in flight. And it's really gorgeous. I don't know. I enjoyed those a lot, even though there were times where I was like, okay, this is the 15th time we're doing this. But every time I just felt like, yeah, you're implanting us in this place.
Implanting is such a good word because they are literally taking you amongst them, planting things, you know, the fruits of that then. And to me, it felt absolutely apt for the story it's trying to tell, because it is a story, for better or worse, it is an examination of what that American dream is, right? And that connection to the land, the connection of growing, regrowing something, of flourishing in a place that perhaps you're not quite meant to, you weren't initially meant to be in. All of these ideas are so beautifully depicted through the way the camera kind of just loves the landscape that it's in.
Mm-hmm. The stuff about the land, though, before I knew exactly what the movie was trying to do, which was like way after the halfway mark, I was trying to figure out what they were trying to say with the land, because like Lynn mentioned, the land does different things and it's behaving in different ways. So me, I was watching it going like, but what does this mean? You know, like, what does it mean when there's water? What does it mean when there's not? Like, what is the symbolism? Because we're so used to seeing indie films do that, like with the symbolism and this is actually about the socio something.
Oh, I 100% expected the ending to be something completely different, because yeah, I expected that typical indie film payoff.
Mm. Which is not there.
Yeah, no, it's not there.
Ooh, I want to talk a little bit about the payoff and the climax, because we've spent a lot of time talking about how the rest of the film is quite slow and gentle, but we'll get to that shortly. In the meantime, though, have you seen Minari, and do you plan to? Did you like it? WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Be free-minded. BFM 89.9.
미국애들은 할머니랑 같이 방 쓰는 거 싫어한다던데.
I don't like grandma.
걔는 안 그래요. 한국애니까.
Grandma smells like Korea.
야, 뭐라고? Grandma smell?
Oh, pretty boy, pretty boy.
I'm not pretty. I'm good looking.
Hi, everybody. You are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin. Today, we are reviewing Minari, which was released, actually, I think in 2020, but it's just come here now this year. And it is a pretty hot contender for the Oscars that will be happening next week. We've spent quite a bit of time talking about how the movie tells a very gentle story, and in some ways, a flat one. I don't mean flat as in unsatisfying, but it doesn't have sort of huge peaks and valleys, right? The interactions are all very small. But by the end, it really kind of emotionally punches you in the gut, or at least it did for me. And I was curious whether you both had the same reaction.
Oh, absolutely. I think the thing that happens that you don't see coming, usually you would expect a resolution. The film is very brave in that it doesn't give you one. It doesn't give you a resolution at the end. It just kind of gives you more of life. Hmm. And that's perfectly fitting for what the rest of the film is. But somehow that made it even more powerful, that people often go through very difficult things and huge challenges. You may not necessarily then have either a grand tragedy or a great happy ending. You just kind of move on. Mm. And that was actually a really powerful way, a powerful message for the film to have.
And like you said, it's as flat in a good way as the rest of the movie, which I didn't mind at all. I think it was a kind of an emotional punch or gut punch because of how invested I was in the people specifically. Not because I was invested in their business or what they were trying to do or the whole purpose of the movie as a movie. I was very invested as in the family and how they were building each other up or tearing each other down. And only because of that, honestly. And I feel like that is honestly skillful, how they get you to care so much about a family that is very, very boring at its core.
And that could also just have been purely tropes, right? Because Jacob is in some ways, your typical patriarch. If you think about the story in those terms, right, he's the one who wants to start the farm. He's the one who insists we keep pumping money into this. I've got it. I've got it. I will succeed. It looks bad now, but I've got it. It doesn't matter that we're going further into debt. And Monica could also be seen as your typical nagging wife, right? Mm. Saying, no, 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 you know, this is too much money. I'm sick of this. Let's go back to the city. And these are all things that they actually say, but they never, ever fall into stereotype. You know, when you have Yun Ya Jung show up as Sun Jia, she is also not your mom-in-law. She's not your typical mother-in-law. David, the young boy, complains that she's not a typical grandma. And I think it's the fact that the movie sort of, to loan your term, Arvind, kind of skillfully avoids the cliche. That's part of what makes it so good, and that's part of what makes the relationships they've built so emotionally real, I think.
Yes, and I think they avoid those cliches. The script and the direction avoids those cliches by giving them really complicated human moments in between. I love just little scenes of the dad, Jacob, sort of celebrating something with his son. You know, some very everyday thing. Or Monica kind of tearing up because her mom brought her anchovies from Korea. I think moments like these prevent these characters from turning into tropes and instead make them into real breathing humans, because you know that either you would have reacted that way or you know people who have reacted that way. And I think the thing I like the best is that they do this so well with the children, particularly David, because it's so easy to cheat and have a cute kid and pull at your heartstrings. Mm. But this film doesn't do that. David is, he's a great child actor, but the script also gives him a lot of space, and the interactions that he has with his parents and his grandmother, even his sister, you end up, I loved every scene the kid was in, really, but it didn't feel like I was being manipulated.
Mm. Mm. They don't come off as cartoons. They are as subversive with everyone in this small, extremely tiny town. And like, you know, you like, you're looking out for the villain to show up, and you're looking up for someone to show up to cause trouble or someone to be a racist to them. Especially because it's positioned in this out of, you know, middle of nowhere town in old America, right? But that kind of isn't the point as well. So they never actually go there. And I think that's important to say, because I'm pretty sure a lot of people are going to go into this movie looking at the trailer, the posters and the synopsis, looking for those kinds of things to happen and looking for high drama. If you're looking for that, you might be disappointed, because it just never shows up.
So I wanted to say also that I think that this is the kind of movie where in the future it's likely not to get a cinematic release. We've talked about this, how probably your dramas, your art house films, unless they make a very strong argument for the visuals, are likely going to go the way of streaming, which is not to denigrate or downplay, it's just very likely to be how it is, while your Godzilla versus Kongs are the ones that are going to make it to the big screen. And sure, that might happen in the future. But for now, I found Minari a great big screen watch, and it's partly because of the pace. So I think that as a viewer, and this is my fault, it's not the film, it's definitely me, I think a film told at this pace, at this scale, is exactly the kind of film that people might be tempted to double screen. Mm. It is exactly the kind of film that you might think, oh, it's okay, I can just sort of see what's happening on my phone, or I can pause here and go get a drink, because, you know, or not even pause, because they're taking a walk in the field again. But I think watching it on the big screen and being immersed and focused in this slow, beautiful little film was part of what made the viewing experience so satisfying, is the fact that you don't have a choice. And it felt really old-fashioned and lovely to watch it in that way. And yeah, I just wanted to say that if you feel safe going to the cinema, supporting Minari is kind of not a bad idea.
And, you know, there's something about a film opening in the theatres. I think it and then for a film like this that tells this kind of story, because as we come to the, we're in the midst of hashtag Oscars so white, you know, what does representation mean? How does cinema reflect the politics? And this film manages to be so beautifully political without necessarily attempting to be at all. Like you said, Arvind, a lot of what happens in the film, a louder film or a more pointed film would have gone there very easily. Mm-hmm. The fact that it didn't, I think, is exactly what makes it a great theatre watch for as many people who can watch it in the cinema versus someone who discovers it on a streaming service.
So I have like the opposite opinion, but I'm 100% going to vouch for going to the cinema. Like if you can and you feel safe, then go watch it in the cinema. Like always, always, always. But I thought this film was perfect for watching at home as well, because it's nice. It's the perfect sort of like cozied up on a weekend night or like a Saturday night, watching this and giving yourself time to completely immerse. And it's one of those movies where if you have a dog barking or like if you can hear your neighbors, it's not going to spoil or ruin the experience, because it is set in that sort of an atmosphere where all of this sort of plays into the movie as well. So in that sense, I found that, you know, being on like just being on like a couch or sofa where you can like recline and be lazy and watch this and enjoy the 2 hours is way better than being in a seat that may not be as comfortable or having to drive out and go see it. But again, I will say that if you want, it's a beautiful film and the cinematography is amazing. So if you get a chance to watch it in the big screen, like definitely watch it on the big screen.
I actually agree with you entirely as well. I think it really depends on what you're bringing to the movie at that point in time. And I guess for me, after a few bombastic weeks of movies, I liked going back into a big dark screen, a big dark room, and being immersed in Arkansas. I didn't expect to, but there it is. Also, Lee Isaac Chung's next movie is going to be the live-action adaptation of Your Name. And after watching Minari, I'm so excited to see what he's going to do with that.
I did not know that. I'd be really interested because it's also super different.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why. My brain went like his next film and I immediately thought post-credit scene and I'm like, is this a Minari cinematic universe? Because we're so predisposed. But we also mentioned like Godzilla versus Kong in the same conversation. So you can't blame me.
No.
But yeah, no. I will honestly like super looking forward to see what this guy does next, because this is like this is such a controlled film. Like he definitely knows what he's doing.
We've been talking today about Minari, which came out kind of towards the end of last year, but has been gaining buzz for a while before that. It has gotten so many awards, both for the Oscars as well as other film awards. We want to know whether you've seen it. What do you think? Do you plan to? You can WhatsApp us 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.